Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, The Deep Dive, featuring your esteemed hosts, Andy Monitor and Drew Dinzik, powered by BetSperts.
Welcome, friends.
This You did the Nance. Remember that we did that a few years ago. We did the bird music.
Yeah, made people insane.
I don't know if I brought it up on this show or somewhere else, obviously.
Yeah.
But the one, like 3 or 4 years ago, it was like one of the first Masters I'd watched in this office. I found one stream. I found a feed that didn't have announcers until like noon. Remember that was like the first time that was a thing, and I don't even know if it was on purpose, but it was like just shots of the golfers, and there was no announcers, and they didn't have the fancy, you know, microphones hooked up, so you weren't hearing like the hard club on the ball. It was just kind of like watching golf, and it was the most tranquil thing I've ever. I'm like, I knew it wasn't gonna happen. I'm like, I want all 72 holes like this. This is just so nice. And it's not like the Masters has bad announcers. They do a good job. You know, you get CBS's fucking A team on Saturday and Sunday. They don't mess around. But this is it is such a tranquil place. So, you know, I'm pumped to, you know, watch golf Friday once it rains all day Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really excited to hear what you have to say about this, because I'm too close to golf sometimes, I think, where I'm talking with people in chats, I'm talking with people in Discords, I'm talking to the guys I work with, I'm talking, you know, that guys are writing articles about DFS and like just all this stuff constantly. And I don't want to say echo chamber, but you get too close to something and you start to get some preconceived notions. So I really like talking to you about some of these sports. And
okay.
Yeah, we'll get back to some NFL here soon. We got 3 weeks to the draft, but Christ sakes, it's the Masters, guys. This is a special week in my heart. I'd be really sad if the rain
comes. I hold this. If it F's up Friday, or I mean Thursday in particular, like I'm gonna be tilted. I like Thursday of the Masters more than I like Thursday of round one March Madness personally.
Oh yeah.
It's the jam. And this is a good field. There's a lot of really compelling storylines this year. Do you want to just rip through these and just kind of high level thoughts on how to capture it? Worth capturing, priced in, like just kind of give me a gauge, you know, some thoughts, and then we can weave that into a little bit of a discussion of modeling golf pricing.
Because yeah, it's funny that you go to modeling and golf pricing right away, because, and I don't want to say this is an all-encompassing look for every kind of market and bet you're going to make this week, but sure, when it comes to the Masters, betting outrights, it does start to be a little vibes.
Vibes, sure.
Like, you know, the waiting on vibes / eye test / gut feel / you know, just like how people are jiving.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's always a little bit of your handicap, but the Masters that you crank that up to 11. The live split has exacerbated that, because now we have like a dozen and a half golfers whose data is basically garbage. Like there's,
you would
some
say
of it
that really,
what
you think, it's garbage,
the live data?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's very incomplete. The strokes gained data coming from live is very suspect for a few different reasons. First and foremost, even if it was complete and well done, like again, you're comparing kind of two different sports at some points, not only because of the differences in the skill level and how they're playing the tournaments, but just like some of the guys' motivations in the fields. I've seen some guys just really dog it when they never would have done that back in the past. So no, like, without getting into the weeds of strokes gained, like it's probably trash.
Yeah.
Like all of the live data that's come out, not to say that it's better. It's certainly better than nothing.
Yeah. Like if a 59 falls at Live Mayakoba and no one was there to see it. Did it actually happen?
Yeah. That was still a good round. Like, you go look at, like,
we are assuming it actually happened, right?
Well, and the beauty of it happening there compared to, like, Thailand or Doral or Yan or some other place is, like, we've actually had PGA events at Mayakoba.
Okay. Like,
we've played a tour event there. We know it's a trash resort course that people have it. But that said, you know, we play on four or five of those a year in the PGA, and sometimes those fields aren't that strong, but we're still not getting a 59 every time.
But, right.
You know, it was still very impressive. And that that goes to show there are some very good golfers on LIV. It's just that's what I'm saying. The modeling aspect becomes difficult because of that.
Yeah.
And then also just because the data we're getting from LIV right now is rough.
Let's tackle that one first.
Okay.
This is, I think, the most important storyline for the Masters in every regard. Because you're right. Like, if you're betting round three of the AT&T matchups, don't overthink it. Just plug and chug. Like, that should be a math problem. If you're betting outrights for the Masters, it's not necessarily the same because there are a lot of kind of externalities that you have to account for. And the big one this year is the LIV data and what to do with it. Because I think you're correct in that there is huge, you can cast dispersions on this any which way you want. Like, if you give them the benefit of the doubt that it's actually good and correct, then even then there are issues, right? Like you said, like the motivational issues with the players, like, you know, are they working on aspects of their game that they think will help them here at Augusta as opposed to help them win the Doral, whatever it was. And so these are huge questions. And I think ultimately what I found as I tried to solve this on my own was that it pretty much eliminated any LIV player from being betting value in the market if you are handling it correctly. Because what do you ultimately have? You have if you're using any type of strokes gained framework, blah 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 blah. If you're using any type of strokes gained framework to project round scores and overall scores, relative to the field, to come up with probability of win or probability of winning a head to head matchup, you have two important inputs into that framework. One is median strokes gained input. The other is uncertainty. Okay. And for most players, you have an uncertainty band that's pretty symmetrical because that's just the way they come up with the strokes gain data. I think you manually have to have long tail bad for the strokes gain data you have from LIV, because other than the very edge case weird stuff of, you know, it's possible that there's uncertainty and that these guys are better than their strokes gained are telling you that are playing on the LIV tour. But in reality, it's much more likely that the data itself is just highly questionable, and you're probably to the right. The median is probably to the right. And if you do your uncertainty band with an asymmetrical distribution, then your long tail bad is going to drive the downside of those LIV players out of any type of contention from winning at market price. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm willing to throw that out for like four guys.
Okay, this is such a great transition. It's like you read my mind. Okay,
the toughest part of the because the context you have to put towards, like, hey, what about like and honestly, Cam Smith is such a bad example too because of how he's like just generally carried himself. But like, there are multiple players that have won majors. There are two players that finished top two in this major last year. There are two players that won a major on tour last year. There's another player that won, I think it was 2022 Genesis in Neiman. I mean, he went wire to wire against a great field.
Yes, he did.
I think he's a better player than he was then.
Wow.
You know, okay. So like there's like four or five guys where you do need to just probably throw most of it out because it's almost just like they're going out and playing preseason games every week until they get to some of these, especially for a guy like Brooks, who we've seen just like, oh, he did this when he was on the PGA Tour as well, where it's like, he's playing good. He's playing good. Oh shit. He's playing great. Oh yeah. You're at the US Open. Like,
oh.
that's just what he does. There's just a turn on level. So
the there's old a weird, there's switch a weird, flipper.
yeah, there's a weird context you have to throw to some of these guys. And,
okay.
And it's very difficult because it sucks not being able to work. But at the same thing, it makes me think of like, Drew, make a fair for the Utah Jazz Hinkle Fieldhouse, no crowd, against Real Madrid. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes, I do.
Basketball is basketball, Drew.
That's a great comp, actually.
But take a team from the EuroLeague, or yeah. Obviously they're in, you know, La Liga for, I think it's just called La Liga for basketball too.
That's a fun.
Take a EuroLeague team and take one of the best EuroLeague teams, especially now that basketball has gotten to the level it has across the ocean. And we have some very good players every year coming from over there. But yeah, Real Madrid versus the Jazz, like,
yeah,
have fun. Like, it's an exercise in futility. Yeah. That said, what if Real Madrid had four starters that, you know, had like 8-year careers in the NBA and were still kind of in their peak?
Yeah,
it makes it a little different.
Yeah, yeah. And the trade-off is, well, they're not tired. They haven't played a full 82-game regular season, but they also
those
aren't.
Guys, they're also grind,
they're also playing. They're also playing Barcelona and other.
Have you seen those schedules? We're getting off on a tangent, but those guys play like, if you're one of the best teams, you play your normal schedule just like everyone else in the league, but then you also just play a completely overlapping season of Champions League.
Yeah.
Like the Euro League, like it's pretty wild how much basketball those guys can get in.
Yeah, the logistics make my head hurt. So let's start at the top with Mr. Rum, because this is the toughest question of coming up with a fair. I went through my exercise of coming up with a median, doing an unbalanced uncertainty, and I still can't come close to. I can't reconcile 1350 for him. Like, what's going on here? Like, why in the world are you affording us this big of a, like, a, you know, a blind EV on the guy who's probably the second best golfer in the world?
Yeah, I was gonna say my fare's about 12. Like, he's,
that's not trivial, man.
No, it's not. But and I'm very close to betting him. And again, a big part of what we've seen here and what makes golf so much different than some other sports is, like, you know, you joked about it last week with the Fuzzy Zeller curse, but I mean, that's a thing we talk about with debutantes.
Yeah.
But even guys who've played here once or twice, I mean, Spieth won here in his second try, but Spieth was a very unique talent, especially when he was young. Like, guys do not tend to win this event until they've played here a few times. Like, the experience factor, knowing your way around this course and knowing how to, you know, there's such a tactical factor to playing this course. That's why Tiger Woods probably going to make the cut if his legs hold out.
Sure.
Because he knows exactly
two rounds of golf.
He knows exactly. Yeah. He knows. And maybe, you know, partway through, I don't know if that, it's like the scene from Pulp Fiction where, you know, pride might nip at him a little, but if he knows, like, hey, I can play a round where I'll be here this weekend. Like, I don't need to make shots to try to win this tournament. I'm fucking 50. But no. He knows exactly where to put the ball. That's why, like, Fred Couples and Bernhard Langer, these guys, like, make cuts at, you know, 65 because they're not hitting the ball 300 yards, but they know exactly where to put it, and they know their way around this course. There is such a, you know, guys who've shown the aptitude to tackle Augusta and play it well, you have to give them just like that's what I'm saying. The vibes, the eye test, the intangibles, the qualitative stuff. I have to give it like these bumps. And that's why my fares are kind of a range.
Okay. That's fair.
That's the middle of my range because
12. Right now, again, like, you can bet to win $250,000 on one click at old bookmaker, and they're giving you EV here by basically any way I can get to a fair price, which is really surprising. So just kind of full transparency here, my fare for Rom to win, Once we saw, you know, and again, like we can get into some of the other nitty gritty stuff like weather and tee times and all that shit. Like, let's pull that, put that at the end. But my fair for Rahm is just south of 10% to be back to back green jacket. I don't understand why he is 1350. I don't get it. And I kind of wonder if you think there are people who are hesitant to fire into a Rahm number because of the live questions, not just the live questions about his current form, but, you know, the reports of him being kind of just generally agitated by all of the, you know, kind of poking and prodding and the why did you defect stuff. You know, like, do you think there is a kind of, you know, any type of potential head games at play?
So, you're fair. You're even more bullish than I.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't understand this price.
It's fuck. I am going to bet this. I said this too. And I joked with Noonan. I joked with other people. Like, you know, the worst thing.
Like, is there an X factor like that though? Like a mental thing or just the back to back?
No, I mean, so people rare, have like, said that too. Then there's plenty of quotes from people who've, you know, and even from vets who've played this a dozen times now, they said like, you think you're fine and then you get there. Or you know, even the guys who said like, you know, I came out early, I played a practice round, you know, I won a tournament early in the year. So I knew I was in. So I was able to go down there and play way before. And it's like, it just hits so much different when the patrons get there, when it's, you know, everything's like they get out the iconic scoreboards, the leaderboards, like everything that you've seen growing up. It's almost like the, you know, the only comp I can really think of it is the first year head coach, first year quarterback in their first playoff game kind of thing, where it's just like, it's like, hey, this guy has some wins against some big teams. This guy has beaten some teams they maybe shouldn't have, and they're playing way above their level, and we underrated them all year. But I'm still going to bet against them in the playoffs because they're playing against, you know, an experienced head coach. They're playing against an experienced quarterback. And I think that's kind of what that is another problem with the debutants. That's a problem you get with some of the guys who've maybe not been here enough or, you know, maybe played here. You see that sometimes a guy plays as an amateur and then doesn't get back for a few years, or he gets there early in his career by winning something or finding his way in and then misses a few years. Even that, I think, just getting back to that level and rolling down Magnolia, like it has to be, you know, it has to be a little bit jarring, I suppose. So that, and then obviously, like you said, just it being such a tactical course where you need to find your way, you know, you need to find your way into the right spots. There's so many, like, I don't want to just say like elevation changes, but uneven lies, you know, it's not play. Yeah. You're not playing a TPC course. You're not playing one of these, you know, I don't want to compare it to the LACC. Their fairways weren't uneven. They were just
there's no barrancas.
I mean, those things were just like this. but I mean, there's just so many uneven lies that you're going to have to, you know, hit balls above your feet, hit balls below your feet, find these greens. These greens are fast as shit. You know, some guys just haven't had success putting on, even though they're pretty pure. They've given some people some troubles over the years. So, the experience is massive. So that's why, you know, I'm a little bullish on Rahm, not like you, but
okay. Okay, so let's go through the rest of the live guys real quick, and I'll just tell you where I'm at.
I want to ask you one quick thing on him, though, the trend thing. And they say because, you know, you're in charge of the champions dinner, you have other obligations, you're doing a lot more media. I don't think John Rahm's media has gone up since he won. Like, he was still doing plenty of media last year. He was John freaking Rahm.
Yeah, the questions he's being asked, are clearly grating on him.
Oh, yeah, it's different. Obviously, it's different. But I'm just saying in general, the trend of the defending champion not doing well, that's been a trend that has been ongoing. There's only been three men ever to repeat. And then oftentimes the person who won last year does not. I think it's been pretty rare in the last 10, 15 years for them to even top 10.
Scotty top 10.
Scotty's built different. He's a trend buster. Okay. Do you remember the players? I'm like, everyone's like, oh, the players isn't predictive. You can't. Okay. Scotty can't win again. I'm like, fuck, have you met Scotty? Like, this is you know, this is Texas Tiger, guys.
Okay, so we'll hold your thoughts on Scotty, because we're gonna go. That's narrative number two that we need to tackle. So the live guys that I'm showing value on, Rahm, is the only one that I'm like, wow, what in the world is this price? Brooks, I'm a little under fair for him. And I think that's because I'm manually kind of not giving him as much of a delta for try hard versus, you know, whatever, the way he has been playing. Like his run up last year, he was much more competitive in those live events for whatever reason. I think I don't know if it's an injury thing or just an effort thing, but he does not look quite as dynamic now. But he's still a top
playing,
six for me.
Playing around with a different putter. He's
top six for me still, even with all that.
I bet him.
Third best live guy I have is Joaquin Niemann. I have him as top 10 most likely. And then fourth, I have Bryson DeChambeau, and I show some value on him. So Niemann and DeChambeau and Rahm would all be fair plays by my numbers at current price, and Brooks just off. All of the rest of the live guys, freaking throw them in a what do you call it? Do not.
I don't know.
Miss the cut parlay. That was what I was going to say. Miss the cut parlay, because the rest of the group, this crew does not look especially sharp right now. So
yeah, Brooks. There was a 25-1 earlier in the weekend, Brooks. That was probably a bad number. I think anything by fairs, I don't know, like probably 18 if I looked, 18-50. Okay. I think he's still bettable. Niemann is so. I don't know if you said you did listen to the pod earlier. So I bet Brooks. I bet Niemann.
Okay.
I bet Xander. That's it.
Okay.
I'm very interested in Rahm, and I'm very interested in a couple other guys. It'll probably be a bigger card than normal. And we talked about this too. I normally live in that 30-60 range with maybe grabbing one favorite. This isn't that kind of tournament where I'm going to grab a bunch of guys that are 50-1 because those guys can win. But it's going to be a lot closer to the top of the board for a tournament like this. So
I
Niemann, same thing. My fare is like 24.
Okay. So let's just basically put we will not be shocked. But those four guys right there at the top alone. And if you want to leave Bryce down, just say those top three. That's enough win probability that we should not be shocked whatsoever if there is a live champion here. My total sum for those is just a little under 15%.
Cam Smith obviously is interesting too.
Is a giant red for me.
it's a terrible number. But I can't bet him. Like I can't bet him considering how he's looked since he's left.
Hatton?
But I just he should be a better match for this course. He just hates this course so much or something.
Okay.
Cam Smith, all I can remember is that, a few years back where he was just, he was on the front page of the leaderboard. He was second the whole time.
Cruise control,
he looked so good. And then, since going to live, it's been not hit and miss, just miss, mostly miss for him. So I'm not sure where his head's at. He's somebody I do want to watch his early round and see, if he's playing well, I might look at him for like a live top 20, but right now, his numbers are unbettable right now for sure.
Yeah,
Brooks, Calhoun, Link Calhoun, friend of years, friend of tears. We talked a little Bryson-y late at night.
Mm-hmm.
As we sometimes do. He thinned out. He isn't looking like he's uncomfortable wearing a shirt.
No longer the Hulk.
He looks a little closer to, and it would have been like his natural progression. He was a young, skinny dude. Like this is about how he looked after he filled out, I guess.
Yeah. Is he bringing back the page boy cap?
Yeah, he's so smart too. Like he is just a smart golfer. And people forget when he was at the top of his game. Because everybody thinks of him as like this long drive guy now, big guy, hit ball far. But when he was at the top of his game, he was a superb short game guy.
Okay.
Like he was such a good putter. He had the whole pack. Obviously, he won big ass tournaments, guys. So
yeah,
I don't know where I'm at with him. His number is close, but I'm not interested. Okay. Bryson was the ticket I held. For like 9 months, I never liked to bet Masters Futures early. I bet it just slightly early in 2020. and
then they
no, like it. A, like yeah. a month early, not yeah. not sitting on it for 6 months, but then I ended up sitting on it until the fall. Obviously,
and he is that when he ejected with like an 11 on 15
first, yeah, first, yeah, first ball round. Went into the azalea bushes. We're yeah. we're looking for it.
Okay. Okay. All right. The so live guys winning is very, very real, even though the data is fucked. We are there. We agree. The next argument I have to ask you is about Mr. Scheffler. this is a very short price for a tournament with this many of the world's best golfers. I don't think that's shocking to anyone. I think the history speaks for itself. We haven't had a favorite this short since, do you know, 2008, 12, something like that with Tiger. It's been a while since he had a favorite this short.
Tiger was favored to the field at one point, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure, sure, sure. I mean, I think he was like in the 4-1 range in maybe like 2012-ish. Like, we're not that far removed from the favorite this big.
No, I would say like 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. He was probably, okay. 2, 3 to 1.
Okay. Basically, if you use the strokes gain data from ShotLink and you just true blue, carry it forward, it tells you a couple things about Scotty. He is approaching Tiger Woods' level of peak of just median performance, and the consistency is like remarkable, right? Like he has one minus strokes gained round since the season started, right? And it was a very tiny minus in like round two of, I don't even remember, Pebble Beach maybe. So here's the question, okay? The data for Scotty, is there a median shift because of the current state of the PGA Tour and lacking some of these other elite players? Because if you are winning without really having to be a risk taker, it's a lot easier to keep your median nice and high and nice and flat, tight bands, right? Like if he's winning easy, is that shifting him positive? Mm-hmm. And like, is there potentially overconfidence in what his true median strokes gained is right now?
I think it's something else, but I did want to touch on that because he you don't see him make the risky plays all that much.
No. Why would he?
He
doesn't have to catch John Rahm, who he's behind.
I don't think it's that, but because again, half the time you don't even know what the other guy's scores are.
Okay.
There's been time after time, there's been, people on the course, like, I had no idea that guy was catching me. I had no idea that guy was falling behind and I was actually in the lead. Like, catching a guy trying to go, sometimes they do have to figure it out if they need to go for it late. You know, if they're in the, if all the leaders are in the final group, obviously, but sometimes it's just, it is a solo game. You're playing out there by yourself, man. And I think a lot of the reasons you don't see the go for it risky, nutty stuff is because he's never in a bad position.
Okay.
Like golf is like a tree, man. It's an extension of the shot before it. Yep. And if you're not speething it and having to cheat and hit it onto the clubhouse roof into the drain pipe to get a good drop, like because you were in the woods next to a huge sewer, it's a lot easier. Obviously, he's an electric elite, the best irons player right now. But it also just, it's like exponential. When you're that good with your irons and that good with your second shot, and then you're constantly in a great position from your first shot, it just makes it that much harder for everybody else. Like, oh, he's got a 6-footer again. He's got a 6-foot. Like, even as a guy who's not been that good at putting, he just leaves himself so many makeable things because of the first two shots. And I mean, his first two shots are enough to probably be a worse putter than he actually is and still get wins. If you look at his last five starts, his average finish position, 3.4, not third place, but not quite fourth place.
Okay.
Like you said, he hasn't had a bad round hardly all year. Even the double bogeys have just been goofy stuff. Like when he has even a bad hole, it's just like, oh, that was just a weird double toilet bowl putt where he missed two really short putts, or he had a ball spin really funny back into the water on a hole a couple weeks back. Even when he has a bad hole, it's just like, well, it's just bad luck. Like it's not, oh, he duck hooked it into the goddamn water and he's giving away this tournament. Yeah. It's something to behold. And when you're watching him with the players, it was just like, when you could feel it, like, holy, he's just going to keep doing this because he's kind of zoned in right now. And you just expected every iron shot to be, I don't know, damn near hitting the pin, well within the shadow of the flag. So if he does stuff like that again on a course like this, his price is probably pretty fair. I don't see a good way to like make a price for him, honestly.
No, what I'm asking is it an easy, not a, like is it an easy stay away, right? Because like I think there's a chance that his data is a little favorable because of the situations he's been in. And because of sort of the lack of competitiveness on the PGA Tour broadly,
that is a thing too. I forgot you'd mentioned. So the fact that we've had like some of the, and I'll give flowers to, you know, like Shoffley who's played well. Give flowers to Wyndham Clark, who's had some good finishes. But some of these other big names who are supposed to be winning tournaments, like Homa's been. I don't want to say putrid. I don't want to dog on some of these guys. We're very good golfers, but like we saw the beginning of the year where there was just so many of these long shots. It's like, oh man, there's like multiple good golfers in this tournament that just put out a bad performance. Homa, Morikawa, Hovland, Rory. Like these are names that are supposed to go in. And I mean, if you have those four names, one of those should be near the top of the leaderboard. We didn't see that a lot. So I think your point has some validity. But at the same time, the tournaments he won outside of, you know, whatever it was he played in, like the fall, the Hero or something, but the API and the players, like those are good fields. He was dueling, especially the players, he was dueling with very good players at the time, yeah. You know, major champions, Xander's playing almost as good as anybody. So there is something to it, though. There's been a bunch of top golfers that have had kind of 3 months of disappointment so far.
Okay, interesting. So maybe there's a, maybe I'll, because Scotty being the best takes some of the pressure off of him, though, right? Like being clearly the best, there's a little bit of a lack of pressure. And I mean, you see it in the data. Like 2023, the story of Scotty Scheffler in 2023 was nonstop elite ball striking, just flat, awesome every single tournament. Positive strokes gained approach off the tee, every single one. His last negative strokes gained approach was 2022 St. Jude. Like we're talking a million fucking rounds ago. Yes. And
patron saint to the lost cause.
But hand in hand with the kind of elite ball striking in 2023 was a lot of red putting, like a lot of just yuck. What happened? Oh, you got third at the Memorial. That's because you lost two strokes putting.
Like you lose a stroke and a half to the field and finish T6 at the
Exactly.
The Tour Championship. Yeah.
The Tour Championship, right. And
I'd have to go back and look at that field.
Yeah, but
there was probably some decent top players there.
There were some good players in that field, right? And this year, it's just largely been a slight correction to the good from him from a putting standpoint. Certainly in the, you know, the events that he won. But I'm perfectly fine saying, look, if the pressure's off because you're like, I'm the best ball striker in this tournament by a mile, and no one's really going to catch me, and I'm not really trying to run anyone down who's elite, and the other guys who are out here besides Xander are kind of fiddle fucking around, like. No, all of a sudden there's a lot less pressure on my putter. Like this is, I think it's explainable. I don't think he just like suddenly solved anything when it comes to putting. And I think ultimately, like I think you should be prepared for a little bit of a disappointment from Scotty this week relative to sort of the walking on the sun type of heat you've seen from him in his last three starts in particular. Really all year, I guess. The American Express where he got 17th is the only event that he did not finish top 10 all year, which is insane. So yeah, I mean, you're saying it's 50. No. And so, you know, so I would just say that the situation here is going to be a little different. Surely he's playing in an absolutely ridiculous group, right?
He probably would have Was that the one where they? Oh no, I'm trying to think which one was three rounds. That was the Nick Dunlap tournament.
Okay. Well, just keep an eye on the strokes game number, putting number for sure on day one and day two, where he's playing with elite golfers and Xander and Rory, and he's playing in a field where he may feel like he has to take a little few more chances than he would rather. Generally opt for. So I just kind of keeping a close eye on that, because otherwise, like, there's really nowhere to poke holes in his game.
And yeah, I was going to say, even that, I just don't see him doing it. Like, he just plays. I think he just trusts that over 4 days, he just sometimes the putter's going to let him down. But if he keeps doing what he does, he's going to give himself enough gimmies that he's going to be there. You know, and. It's not a course that has a lot of those risk reward holes where, you know, I'm going for this, or I'm going for this green, or normally you never would, or it's hard to take big risks here. Okay. I mean, you know, he could really try to dial in some of these tee shot or approach shots, but he just does that anyway. So I don't even know if he can fall victim to something like that. He just like a steady eddy tee to green monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. You got a thought on who should be the number two on the PGA Tour guys between Rory and Schauffele? Because why in the world is Rory shorter?
Rory, I mean, better pedigree over the course of a longer sample. I have a 9-year-old who's never seen Rory win a major championship. It's been a while.
He got second at the Masters a couple years ago, right?
And that was the thing. I pulled this over on our
tool at the U.S. Open last year.
The Betsford's Golf. I looked at just rounds, only major rounds for the last 5 years. And it made me sad at how good, like, Rory and Xander's numbers were overall. Yeah. But, like, Zalatoris, too, and his sample size wasn't even as big. It's like, you know, just playing really well at the majors, golf is still so hard. It's still so hard, man. You got to have so many things go right. You can have the best round of your life. Somebody with a slightly higher ceiling has the best round of his week. And it doesn't matter. Congrats. Nobody remembers who came in second. It was Brooks last year. So it is crazy. Like, just looking at Rory's overall pedigree at big tournaments is one thing. But, yeah, he hasn't played well on tour. He played well in some DP events. He played well last year. I personally thought, like, coming into the season, some of the pressure would be off him because the live stuff is just kind of dying down. It's not some huge debacle anymore where it's constant, like, vitriol. It is what it's just like one of these things where we're just kind of waiting for all the tours to combine at some point. They're just working on the paperwork. It's going to take a couple of years. So the fact that he doesn't have to be water carrying for the tour, the fact that he's not on the players committee anymore doing all that, you know, I think he should be coming into this season a little more refreshed, relaxed, and ready to just concentrate on winning golf. And then he goes out and he hasn't had a top 10 all year.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Short term.
You got third at Valero. There you go.
Oh yeah. I guess going into the Texas swing.
Yeah, not impressive.
That was
not an impressive run.
Yeah, I guess that was a thing I was spitting for a while. Was just like, you know, it's been okay, but he's just never been in contention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should. I got to update that.
Yeah, the thing about his current form and why it's so questionable is because little different parts of his game keep letting him down.
I do want to point out real quick, though, that third place was 9 strokes out of second. And that's not totally a dig on Rory. That is a holy shit, Denny and Baccia. Like, you guys.
Yeah.
I actually had to go back and look at that because I'd just kind of forgotten after the playoff. I'm like, how far back was the pack? I thought it was like 6 or 7. Jesus. So third place. It's funny. Third place gets the same amount of money no matter what. But maybe that's a springboard here. I don't know. There's this pressure that's got to be building for him too, because I think he expected to win this tournament like probably 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, the big story heading into last year's Masters was like, this is it for Rory. Like, he had been like sneaking off to the course and skipping events to go do practice rounds and blah, blah, blah. And he got cut last year. He was awful. He was terrible.
I bet Rory missed the cut.
It was 7-1. What kind of price did you get?
It was a huge number. It was huge just number. Like small bet on a lark. But once you got to Friday, I'm like, oh my God, I have something to really root for on a Friday. This is fun now.
Yeah. And he missed it like with misses at the end too. Mm-hmm. Like it was especially for anyone who was cheering against him, it was an especially satisfying viewing experience. I don't know, Xander for me is so, at least numerically, is so clearly the second best of the PGA Tour guys. I don't 100% understand what's going on with these prices. I have decent edge on him at price. What's the bull case and bear case for betting X at price?
I mean, the bear case is that he doesn't win tournaments, which is such a huge part of cashing an outright.
Underrated part.
It is underrated, but he has like, I don't know, 6 top 10s, and this year he played well in the playoffs. He played well in the Tour Championship. He played well here last year. He played well in this part of the schedule last year. He's basically, just from the data, playing as good as anyone who's not named Scotty. Obviously, throwing in the live guys changes things a little, but at the prices he was at, I think it was 16. I got him. Like, you can still get pretty close to that. I'm lower. I'm a little lower as far as a win probability to him. I think he is a little closer to John Rahm than he should be to, Hideki, Spieth, the guys who are above him. So my fare on him is probably, let me look at this. I have this 13-ish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I hate betting this. I feel like and Dustin in the chat mentioned this a while back. I feel like I should just play a top 10 as well. To just you do this, you play the top 10 to win the exact amount you put on the outright, so you just break even if he does the whole Rory thing where he doesn't actually compete but is on the leaderboard the last day.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. This would be such a massive breakthrough for him too, from a guy who just, I mean, he's been a major force on the tour, just doesn't get the W's. He's an Olympic champion, though.
He did. Yeah, he did win the gold medal. He's also like, among performances at majors, he's pretty clearly the best at the Masters, for whatever it's worth. So it's not like the pressure of this particular tournament is a problem for him. All right. So Xander is on the yes. Rahm is on the yes. Scotty's on the fair pass. Rory's on the not fair, in my opinion. I think he's been overbet. Brooks, you're into him?
Yeah, Rory at 11-1. I can't do that sort of insane thing. Brooks at a big number. Yeah, Brooks at...
Okay. So we're down to an important question. We're down to narrative number 3. Narrative number 1 was what to do with the live guys and their data. Number 2 was, is Scottie Scheffler's data biased? Ultimately, you came in on, you think it's not biased, right? That's kind of what
I think that there is a little bit to... The thing about some of the other top players not playing all that well was it wasn't every week. It's just been kind of like, if you look at their season as a whole, the guys like Victor and Cantlay and Rory, they haven't played up to snuff. But at the same time, there's still 150 other guys in a lot of these tournaments. And some of those younger players or lesser knowns are sun running that day. You have to beat people.
True.
Like, okay. You still have to beat people. People are going to score. It's and I know he did win the one tournament kind of going away, which he can do, but he got pushed. He got pushed and he was at 8-under in his final round of the Players. Like,
yeah,
he can put a goddamn round together, obviously.
Okay. So the third story is the debutants. You've kind of danced around this a little bit already, but the numbers would say that you have 2 guys in the top 10 maybe not top 10. Two guys surely in the top 15 who have never played here before. Which feels
rare. Yeah, we mentioned this morning. It is, I kind of want to go back. I just won't have enough time. But like looking at debutante fields over the years, because like not only a major champion in Wyndham Clark, who has played pretty well this year.
Yeah.
But like two guys who were on the winning Ryder Cup team as, you know, wild card choices that played, that scored, that have, you know, done well, that have won.
Who's the other guy besides Ober?
Højgaard.
Okay.
He didn't play nearly as much. Ober played like four. I think he played in four matches, which is kind of impressive for a Ryder Cup rookie as well. But yeah, the debutante class is crazy thick. It is maybe the best. And you know, I went over it ad nauseum. You're going to hear this from everyone who talks Masters. Like, you need experience. You need to know this course. But I mean, still, like, you've seen guys like what Clark did at LAC, like just what some of these guys have done early in their careers, or, you know, obviously Wyndham Clark is not early in his career, but I consider, you know, him getting help, like mental help. I consider that like the beginning of like a second phase of his career, because he was going to just flame out as like a player from being such a spaz and having such a temper issue with himself. And obviously whatever he did worked with a plum, because he got a major championship and he's been, you know, near the top of many leaderboards since. So it is a mental game. So I wonder if Wyndham Clark being in the mix in this, you know, this weekend, it's not going to be like some surprise, even though he is a debutante. Like he deserves to be, you know, sub 40 here.
Okay. Oberg.
Man, he's pretty young. Maybe he just doesn't know any better. He's foreign.
I'm showing value on his number, and I don't know what to do about it. He's
so good. But yeah, just like not only hasn't played here, hasn't played anywhere.
So what do you do about so is it fair to just blindly shift a median based on the historical data of first-timers, you think? Because it's not like first timers play poorly here necessarily. It's just that they don't.
No, ever it's just hard to win.
They never hit the high side.
That's the thing about these trends. Like whenever we hear a trend and it's negative about golf, the basis of the trend, if you break it down to its simplest terms, is if this happens, it's hard for this player to win a golf tournament. Well, the second part of that statement is true for every single player. It is hard to win a golf tournament. Sometimes it's just the fact that, like, you know, there's probably a bunch of tournaments that we could go look at that don't get put under the microscope like the Masters, that, hey, a debutante hasn't won at the, I can't say the 3M because so many people were debutantes in that over the last few years. It's new, but think of an older tournament, maybe like the, you know, Valero or something, where, hey, you know what? Debutante just hasn't won here in like 30 years, and there's only been like three over the last 50. Like, I'm sure there's other tournaments like that. We just don't give a shit about that sort of thing. That's a fair point. There's no debutante market for the Wells Fargo Classic. You know, there's no articles being written about that sort of thing. Whereas like Ludwig is a top 10 golfer in the world right now. And there's probably some value. It's just scary betting on him. But again, he won across the pond, whatever they call all of their tournaments, something Masters, the Czech Masters, the Euro Masters, like he won one of those, but swing season event too. And you can't give that as much credence maybe, but he's still, it's like, hey, this is a course he's never seen. Just going to go in and win. He's going to get a second place, at Farmers or Pebble. Like, he's had some top 10 finishes this year. He's a top 10 golfer right now. So
yeah, I have him as
it's one of those where likely. I'm probably going to look at him as like a top 10 bet.
Okay.
It's going to be really hard for me to pull the trigger at like 25 to 1 to win.
If you were given a free play, if you were spinning, doing the spinner, you get a golfer for you, whatever, and it gives you a choice between two similarly priced golfers. You have a choice between Ludwig and Spieth. Who are you taking between those two? Winner, it's a outright price only.
Oh, it's probably still Spieth, and I hate myself for that.
Oh man. Wow.
Huh. He knows this. If anyone knows this course, Jesus. He's won here. Okay. That's the wrong answer. Like, that's for sure the wrong answer, but in my stupid brain, I would take Jordan.
Okay. I have him as
I don't want to bet either at the current prices. Like I said, yeah. I'll probably take an Oberg. Jordan has a lower floor, but I wonder about Oberg's floor as well with the, hey, shit, I've never been here. This sucks. This is a lot of pressure. Okay. Why am I losing? Oh no.
Okay. Those are the three big stories, I think.
I don't know that there's pine straw in Sweden. I'm going to have to ask one of these guys.
Ooh, there's tundra.
Yeah, the permafrost. 300 yards to permafrost outline.
Okay. I don't know. Any other macro?
You know, Casey's joking about Phil, but Phil's another one where he's probably going to make the cut. He's another one where he knows this course like the back of his hand. He could play this without a caddy or a green book years ago.
Yeah.
And
how about the old timers? He was second last year, right? He had the low score on Friday or on Sunday. Yes. He was the low scorer.
Low old timer. He was, I mean, he gained in everything. His putting was really good.
He shot a 65 on Sunday. Jesus.
Yeah, he tied with Brooks. It was a T2 with Brooks and Phil. But yeah, the 65, Jesus, Phil. That's the thing. Like, I think you can get plus money for Phil to make the cut. I don't give a shit how he's playing in Doral and, you know, Riyadh and Hong Kong and all this other stuff. Like, he's probably making the card to make the cut.
Okay. You got an opinion on laying 1.5 holes against Woods at -110, because that is available to win 10K. And that feels like you basically just need him to take one more swing than Tiger does, which feels likely, right? Like, what's a fair price on Tiger finishing all four rounds? Because it's not the same as his price is.
It's not the same as the cut price.
No.
It feels like he might just make the cut and then pull up lame on Saturday.
Yeah, and then be. Yeah,
I know, and I think that might be half the reason. That's a little bit of an extra bonus why some of the steam has come in on Phil. That's up to like minus what, 130, 140?
Minus 140.
Yeah, that's not a bad matchup.
So basically the out here where you take it in the shorts is Phil does not make the cut, Tiger does, and then Tiger withdraws.
Yeah, because you'd still lose that bet.
Okay. Otherwise, you basically just need him to get to the weekend. So you're getting basically Phil to make the cut.
Well, and even if they both make the weekend, I think Phil's just...
He's going to be outlast them. He's going to outlast them.
Phil's downing. What's the pill? The shot that you take to get less fat.
Oh, yeah. Ozempic.
Ozempic? Phil's like 80% Ozempic right now. He's probably in great shape. He looks refreshed. Tiger's still, that ankle's going to bother him. And that's what maybe underrated thing that only comes up when we talk about Tiger over the last few years. Or some of these old timers, and the reason that they don't play here after a certain amount of years is like, this is a tough walk. This is a long course, and every fucking part of it is uneven. Like, you're not walking on a bike path for 4 miles. It is a long, uneven, tough walk. Anyone will tell you that. There's some decent rises and slopes and hills and bullshit. Like, it's going to wear on him. And I worry that if it's a little cold and wet on Thursday, that might not be a great start for the aching bones.
Okay. Oh boy.
No, I think that steam is very much warranted.
Okay. How about just in general top oldie, old timey?
Oh, what do we got for that?
Any of the super duper let me pull up what that market is.
My guy Langer isn't in. He's hurt.
Langer got hurt? Oh, okay.
It was like a pickleball accident, I think.
Oh, I'm see, not, that's why pickleball should be banned, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Pickleball. I'm 40 now, guys. I'm thinking about if you follow me on Twitter, if you want to leave some comments here, give me some pickleball tips. Because, like, I'm just looking for shit to make the kids stop watching their iPads.
Yeah.
And, like, me and the kid go golfing. I just don't know if I can do tennis anymore. So I'm thinking about doing some pickleball. We do like to hit the sand volleyball pits once it, but it's got to be a lot warmer than this. You know, you don't want to put your feet in the cold sand. Like, I like doing that once summer comes around. But especially since a bunch of bars here have them.
Okay, so
I'm thinking pickleball. So I need pickleball tips, guys. Sorry,
top senior.
tell me what to
top
buy.
Senior Phil Mickelson is -200. Freddie Couples 6-1. VJ 6-1. Mike Weir 6-1. Jose Maria Ola Hobble 25-1.
If you can bet at a FanDuel account, you can get Phil for -120.
What for top senior?
Top senior, very bettable.
Whoa,
multi-winner Freddie is good.
Top Spaniard John Rahm -450. Is that absurd? Like, that should be -4500, right? There's a zero missing.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just a head-to-head with Sergio.
Gotta be Rahm.
Olathabal's a senior. Olathabal's like dead last in the seniors, so
okay.
I mean, there's always Neiman, a risk of like
South American
injury or something. That's probably a banger. That's
-235.
Yeah, that's a bridge jumper.
Like, he has a
very high floor, right?
Yeah, Grillo and Griot and Villegas.
No, you say the L's.
You say the L's? Okay, Grillo and Villegas. Or you say the L's and Grillo and not in Villegas?
Villegas.
Villegas, okay.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. I don't know why. but you do say the L's.
Top South African.
Which is what he's going to catch.
Yeah,
top South American.
South African, you got Van. There's only three. There's only three South Africans. What happened to Ernie Els?
Louis isn't good anymore, and
it's Van Rooyen, Schwartzel, and Lamprecht.
Lamprecht, the amateur Lamprecht.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Lamprecht is good. I could see him. He's your favorite amateur, I think. Boy, that's think a of, I don't want to bet.
Top lefty, Brian Harman, Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson, Mike Weir.
You can take a punt at Phil there, too, for that price.
+350. Jesus. Wow.
I mean, just like Harman's great. Harman has a major win, but I don't know if I trust him here.
I love it, man.
I mean, he should be the favorite, but.
Did our master originator for golf low am come through with the winner yet?
We got to ask him.
We're still waiting. Okay.
So there's funny five. Because we have one fewer, but one more, I think. So now they let in the person who is the winner of the NCAA champions this year.
Oh yeah.
That's a new addition in the last couple of years. So they added that, but your U.S. amateur champion, who always gets in, is professional now. So he won the U.S. amateur, but then he won a tournament. So he turned professional. So the amateur market was going to be, I think it was going to be six, but now we're back down to the five. Lamprecht,
favorite. Who was that?
Dunlap, right?
Dunlap. Okay, thank you. Yeah, escaped me. Okay, yeah, you got Lamprecht is the favorite, Santiago de la Fuente as +250, Hogstead 325, Shipley 500, and Jasper Stubbs 11-1 in the top am and low am.
Don't market. Know a ton about Jasper Stubbs, but Dunlap, because he's playing with Rahm. They always have the U.S. amateur champ play with the defending champ, and they're like, is that still a thing? Because he's a pro. Yeah, it's still going to be a thing, you goofs. This is the Masters. They don't change things up other than trying to make the course a little harder when we beat it.
Hey, can you give me a fair price on 16th hole in one?
Even?
Oh, wow. Yes is -165. Jesus. They want that no money.
I'm out. I hadn't bet it yet, but I talked to somebody. Hole in one, yes, over all four holes. And it's not like four is really going to get too many shots at it. That four, you can take that out of the equation for the most part. But what is it? Six, 12, 16?
Yeah.
It was like minus 240 at some places. Oh, my God. And it was a one-way market. And I said, if this comes out at like plus 160, plus 170 at the for the no hole in one, I'm probably going to have to bet it. That was something I'd bet. You know, I bet the yes at like minus 110, minus 120 years ago. I believe it's jumped the shark a little bit. It's still a, you know, it's still the same size field. It's 90 guys, and they're not all going to see the weekend. We didn't have a hole in one here last year.
Andy, are you ready for this one?
I don't believe hole in one should be that much of a favorite.
Would you be interested in two or more hole in ones?
Should we do a Polish middle where I do two or more and then no hole in ones?
Two or more hole in ones. Oh yeah, the no is minus. Oh, they did the stupid thing where they flip it. Those assholes. Mm-hmm. No is minus 235. Yes is plus 195. I thought the prices were backwards. My bad. Okay. Will there be a hole in one? No. Plus 160 is available.
Yeah, that's gonna make the card.
Okay. Actually, they're writing a bigger bet size bet on that than I would have guessed.
That's a popular one. I think that market gets some love.
Yep. There is no prop for the expected final with the winner, the score of the winner. So just talk me through this. Weather a factor, you know, is this a Dustin Johnson threatens the record type 13 under. Okay. Winter.
We're a little worried about the you know, drier, hard conditions, but okay. All this rain's going to soften it up a little. I don't think it's going to be easy for the balance of the tournament. They have incredible drainage there if they want to.
Yes. There's a creek that runs right through the whole course. Yeah.
I think they can make it so it basically didn't rain if they wanted to with the sub-air. A lot of places have sub-air. And if you don't know what sub-air is, it's worth looking up because it's amazing how this works. A lot of courses have sub-air under their greens.
Yes.
To drain the greens because you really don't want your greens flooding. You don't want that grass fucked up.
That's correct.
And there's plenty of courses that have it. Augusta has more sub-air in other spots. Just like, hey, here's a low spot in a fairway where water collects. Let's put some there. Hey, this is the landing area in a fairway that maybe might collect water. Like, we're going to put one there. Like, they have so much of this shit that it does take a lot of rain to kind of, you know, really make the course soft and spongy.
Okay.
Especially considering, again, depending on what they want, they can turn it up, turn it down, I guess.
What about wind? Wind projections not spooking you?
A little higher, but, you know, you do have quite a few holes that have a bit of protection by those Georgia pines.
Okay.
So it's not usually a huge factor.
All right.
Especially the, you know, just the way the people have been able to hit these fairways.
Okay. I guess, is there anything that you especially care about this tournament that we have not already covered?
No, I did say, like, I just have had so much fun with some of these finishes lately. I hope we get a good finish. Like, it will be annoying. Two things. I want a good finish and I don't want the delay on Thursday to be too poor where we're struggling to get rounds in. Not only that, but from a gambling standpoint, when you don't get a full round in, it fucks up the like round two offerings, the round three offerings. Like, I hate that part of it too.
Hate that part of it.
I do want the fact that there's only 90 guys, 89 rather, it does help you get all the rounds in a little more easily than, you know, a full field tournament. So hopefully it's not too big of a thing.
Let me ask you some, because this has been kicking around the back of my head and I don't have the answer. You like a guy who's in the top tier to win, but he tees off in the afternoon, which might even be tees off on Friday morning. Mm-hmm. Right. In what universe are you better off betting in pre-flop instead of just waiting for one of the world elite golfers who's teeing off in the morning to go out and take some lead of some magnitude, right? Like, isn't there an automatic drift in price for the guys who are late tee times?
A little, but it's usually not. I mean, a guy really has to go off.
It happens every year. There's like a guy who's like 3 under through coming into Amen Corner, and like this guy was going.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. The fact that it does happen every year, and you know the time decay, the fact that those guys have 72 holes, everybody who's going to compete has the same amount of holes to score. Like, you know, you kind of have to base it on. I do think there's something to be said for if someone is scoring like that. And other folks are also scoring, it doesn't behoove them to push those numbers too much bigger because scoring might just be easier that day.
Okay, I see.
And, you know, it's early on. It's like that. Go look at a good example is the Timberwolves game. Timberwolves were down 17-5.
Yeah, they're playing the Wizards, Andy.
I was going to say, but you know that the way
they might still lose.
They could absolutely still lose this game. But if you went and pulled up the live odds, because I did, I just wanted to laugh at it. They were still 10-point favorites on the live line.
Yeah, but this is a different.
That's what I'm saying. It was so early, and they had so many chances, and they're playing against.
That's different. The game state matters in terms of fair price. Blah blah. I'm literally just saying, like
I'm just talking time decay, Drew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know we can't compare the Wizards to a the fact that it's early on, you're not gonna see some guy take a 20% hike in his odds just because somebody early went out and scorched earth.
Okay. I feel like it happened last year because what's his name? Hovland was just lighting it up early and got in the clubhouse at 7 under before Rom even teed off and Rom caught him. And I feel like the best price on Rom was probably right before he teed.
Well, yeah, obviously it's going to move. I just don't know if the risk reward is worth it on because think about what you're hoping for. You're hoping somebody else does really, really well, and then you're betting.
Yeah, no. But there's a blind assumption that someone is going to do well. Right?
No, I know, but then you're also betting into a different situation.
I guess here's the point: if you're late tee time at the Masters on Thursday, you are going to be teeing off with a deficit. And it could be big. It probably is going to be big. History would tell you this happens weekly. Yeah. No doubt.
That's what happens to the afternoon guys.
No doubt. But, I don't know. All right. So,
no, I get what you're saying, but the situation where it goes down precipitously is not just Joe Schmo goes out and shoots a 64. It's former champion and guy who has a jacket goes out and shoots a 64, 63. And then you're betting into a completely different situation. It isn't, hey, here's a guy that might fade and I'm getting a better number on a good golfer. It's like, oh no, like a great golfer is out to a great start here. I'm betting into a completely different situation. And especially if it wasn't just, everybody's scoring, the course is soft right now, my guy's gonna catch up. So I get what you're saying, and I think there's definitely a method to that madness. It's just the context of where you're at once you get closer to that guy's tee time and you're looking at his price compared to pre-flop, as we say.
Got it. Okay. All right. How are you gonna be
also who knows what's gonna fucking happen with this weather?
Yeah, right.
That's gonna be so awful if we screw it up. I mean, Thursday, Friday, I'm going to watch a bunch here. I'm going to try to get a little work done in the morning. Obviously, I kind of want a little delay. I could get a bunch of shit written and just get ahead for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, have a bunch of articles written, and then just watch golf the rest of the day. Go home, watch golf with the kids. I don't know what I'm going to do. Saturday, I might have a volleyball tournament, Drew. So that's right. I'm going to have to charge up the tablet. I'm gonna be that guy who has the tablet with the Masters playing set up on the back of the bleach. So that if we're at the place I think we're gonna be, they have it's a big running track with volleyball courts in the middle. So they bring in those movable bleachers so you can walk behind them. So you set the tablet up there, and I'll just have a crowd of dads behind me watching the Masters with me.
Yeah,
because there's big gaps in between the games. It's like a half hour volleyball game, and then you have an hour before the next one. So there's a lot of time to watch golf. Sunday, I'll be firmly somewhere comfortable, taking it all in.
I love it, man. Well, I guess final kind of final important question.
What are you going to do? What are you? How are you going to watch?
I'm going. No, I'm going up to Mammoth. I'll be spring skiing.
I already got a pickleball DM. Thank you.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to figure this out.
Good deal.
You're going to go skiing?
Yes, last chance. It's this last weekend before it gets real warm. We have Icon passes for next year, which gives you, you know, as many ski days as you want starting April 1st. So this is kind of the only time we can go. So I'll be watching on the lifts on Friday and Saturday, and then enjoying out from the comfort of my home on Sunday.
So yeah, that'll be good. Just couch, TV, birds. I'm going to make pimento cheese, I always do. And then I have one sandwich, and then I throw the rest away like 4 days later. It feels right.
I love it.
Actually, you know what? I might just make pimento cheese dip this year. Sandwiches aren't good. It's good with, like, you know, those pretzel chips. Those
yes. Really thin pretzel chips. Yeah. Yes.
Those are really good for dipping. So I might make some pimento cheese.
No.
I'm not sure on this. I don't know if I'm blanking on a time or not.
He gets paired with Hot Tiger all the time. Although I do have a bet on Homa to head-to-head matchup against Morikawa based on all of the terrible, terrible practice gossip surrounding Morikawa's form. You catch any of that?
That's yeah, not but I'm good. Not. I'm not like enamored with Homa right now either.
Okay, well, let's see.
I think him. Dad life is fucking with his golf.
Oh, really?
Can happen.
Oh, boy. Is dad life going to fuck with Scottie Scheffler if he has to go leave to be with his wife?
She's not due till the end of April. Like, if she goes early, wouldn't that be something?
Be awesome.
It'd
be so crazy.
Do you remember the ROM tournament? Was it the Memorial where he was like six shots clear and he got COVID? And they just pulled his ass out.
Yes.
I mean, it's not the same, obviously, but it's still like, what if Scotty is like well clear? Honestly, they should just pause the tournament. Like, fuck it. Everyone, Scotty's having a baby, you guys. We'll come back Monday. Go be with Meredith. He said, I believe 100% what he said, that he isn't just, because I think Andy, who's kind of a shithead sometimes.
Yeah.
If I was saying that, I'd be like, all right, wife is due April 30th. The odds for, you know, going early is just so low. I'll just say, yeah, absolutely, I would leave because it's never going to happen. But if it actually came up, I'd have to be like, fuck, what am I doing here?
Going to think about
just,
it.
Just had to say, psych.
We're going to think about it.
But like, I believe Scotty in his heart of hearts would absolutely, I would go to the birth of my children, probably. Yeah. It's gross, but it's cool.
Yeah. is this Masters gonna have an asterisk for you because Taylor Gooch is in here? Smash golfs, smash that. GC's Taylor Gooch not invited.
He's not here. I mean going back to Jocko,
yeah,
go fucking get that goal. You go out there and find that puppy.
Yeah,
he went out and won. I really respect IPS Honda Australian Open, whatever it was, DP Tour. Yeah. Not only, if you go look where he played, he was all over the place.
Go
grab some OWGR points. I mean, I think that went a long way with the committee because the committee, this he is got a special
invitation. Yeah.
Which is usually the special invitations are reserved for, hey, here's an upcomer that's playing on like the J Tour or the DP that just doesn't have the points, but we think it's good for the game and good for the international aspect of the game. Whereas like, I think they're just like, man, if this guy was on the PGA, he'd be ranked like 15th. What are we doing? Like, this guy belongs.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I mean, Jocko, I guess I don't know where his points would be, but probably I'd have to think top 15. Yeah, top 15 for just where I think he should be at in the general scheme of rating golfers.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, yeah. I would agree with that. top 10 borderline
12-ish.
Yep.
He's Kirk Cousins, baby.
Well, be sure to post pictures of whatever food you make on Sunday. I'm sure it'll be cool. And that'll be a
I got this wedding coming up and I want to fit into a suit I like. So we've gone full keto. Full keto. No. I haven't had a carb in like 10 days, guys.
You get that Phil Mickelson glow about you.
Just beating it to pasta pictures right now. It's a tough existence. The beauty of it's very keto though.
What's
hot
that?
Wings.
Oh, okay, good.
If there's no breading and you don't get like the super sugary, you know, goddamn sweet hot barbecue sauce, like if you just get straight, you know, buffalo sauce on fried wings, because you need the fat, you need the protein. So I might just live off wings for 6 weeks and get down to my wedding weight.
I dig it. The spicy food tends to stomp on your appetite too, in general, is what I've always heard. All right, man. Best of luck at the Masters. Friends, enjoy the bird sounds. Enjoy the featured groups. Enjoy Amen Corner. Enjoy 15 and 16. I feel like Donnie Pickleball is trying to get you hooked on Caltine bars that'll secretly make you gain weight.
I feel like Donnie Pickleball may be the same guy who's DMing me. I haven't been able to read all the DMs he sent me. I'm trying to deal with this, but because the other guy, the guy who DM'd me, named Donnie, so might be the same Donnie in and of itself.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up here. Enjoy the Masters. Let's go. Who are we pulling for the most? I don't know yet. I haven't done the Calcutta yet, but once that's
who could, yeah, I know. Don't do the Calcutta, but don't worry about the Calcutta. Not from a money standpoint. Who would you enjoy from a viewing standpoint winning the Masters, getting that jacket put on Sunday the most?
Xander Schauffele.
God damn it. I think I'm there too. I feel for him. Like, I'm
no question.
Bad for him.
I mean, Rory would be also notable, but I would be annoyed because I have zero skin in that. And I'm not going to have skin in that at current prices. Definitely Xander. A breakthrough for Xander would be so
worthwhile. There's only a 4 net carbs. These are pretty good.
I'll take your word for it.
They don't look great, though. All right. Thanks, Donnie. Thanks to everyone. Hit the thumbs up. Rate, subscribe, love, enjoy your weekend. Have fun at the Masters. We did this a day early just for you. Have a good one.
Outro. A crustless pimento cheese sandwich. No? You're out on pimento cheese, are you?
No, pimento cheese is, I mean, it's cream cheese, mayo, pimentos, and some cheddar, I think. It's pretty to
just the carbs from the white bread too much.